Everyone.
Hi, everyone. I'm Sarah.
I'm Alicia.
And this is
Sinister States. And so we're coming back at you guys again
with
Montana.
Montana. As if we didn't have fun in the last Montana episode.
Right. I really want to go to Yellowstone. I want to go see all the things.
Is that where Yellowstone National Park is?
Part of it. I think it's in there in Wyoming. I think it's like a combination of a few states.
I need to look at a map.
Kind of similar to...
See, this is where I got all confused, because in my episode, they were talking about Montana, right?
Montana!
And then they were talking about all these people in, like, Wisconsin, and I was like, they're not near each other, but I guess that's not that much space. Because North Dakota and Minnesota are not that big.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's, like, me, my story, just so, oh, yeah, the sinister guess where, I never told you where the woman was actually from.
No,
you know, I told you that she was found in Wisconsin. She was from Chicago, Illinois.
My gosh. My brother is moving from northern Illinois, mm-hmm. right here on the Wisconsin border, all the way to Arizona.
Wow.
Yeah, him, his wife, and their two daughters. For That's no reason. I mean, not for no reason. They just want to live in a nicer, like, climate, but...
I think I would have chose somewhere else. I feel like Arizona's hot.
Oh, my brother thrives in the heat. He's one of those weirdos that, like, the hotter the better... Like, he's very comfortable in the dead of summer, sweating, out in the sun.
Over 100 degrees?
Yes.
Oh, okay. More power to him.
Oh, yeah. No, he loves it. He hasn't lived in Arizona before, but he's been out there to visit. He's also a long-haul truck driver, so he's been everywhere in the heat as well, so it doesn't bother him.
Look at him go.
Yeah, he's been doing that for 8 years.
More power.
I think he's more localized now, but he used to be long haul, like across the entire United States. Like he'd be gone for like
weeks
to a couple months at a time.
Wow, that had to be hard.
Yeah, but he's doing well. He loves it. He loves driving. So
I like to drive too, but I mean I can't drive a big truck.
I give him credit because after 8 years, he's not sick of it yet. So.
Yeah.
Good on him, because I get sick of certain things quickly, and I feel like driving is one of them.
Oh, where the truckers were going to Texas to show their support.
Mm-hmm.
So, I give props to any truck driver, because I couldn't do it.
I couldn't do it either.
It's a lot of work. My uncle was a truck driver in Tennessee until he got hurt. He was trying to tarp his truck in the rain.
Oh.
Like, trying to tarp the load that he had mm-hmm. on the back, because he worked for, it had been Georgia Pacific at one point, but it's something different after that. And he mm-hmm. ended up the back of the truck got wet, and when he went to get off, he slipped and fell and twisted his ankle.
Oh my God.
So, he got, like, it hurt his ankle, and then that disease, like I was talking about, that runs in my mom's side of the family, mm-hmm. kind of ramped up on him.
Yeah.
And so he never got better after that.
Oh.
So... As we said, we're back in Montana.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go over our missing person, and then we'll get into
the sinister.
He's a murderer.
The murderer.
Murderer.
That's how I would expect Zorro to say it.
Murderer.
He's not a husky, by the way.
I was going to say we're going to get into the murder, but this guy's like a serial killer, so it's murderer.
Murderers.
Z. We're gonna end with a Z. Murders.
Z. Emphasis on the Z.
Yeah. Multiple.
All right. First the sad stuff.
Okay. So, well, I mean, it's all kind of sad. But anyways, we're gonna...
I feel like this is more sad.
Yeah. So, our missing person this week is Megan Ginfix. And she's been missing since April 30th, 1980, from St. Ignatius, Montana.
Say that again.
Saint.
Say it however you said it.
Ignatius.
Okay.
Montana.
I don't know how to say it. It could be that. It could. I always say Ignatius, but.
Ignatius. I don't know. It is what it is.
Saint Iggs.
Right.
I watched this show called. What the heck was it called? Oh my gosh. What was it called? New Amsterdam. And one of the actors' names was Ignatius. Or what it, yeah. his character's name. But they called him Iggy.
Oh, okay.
So that's why I'm saying Iggy.
Never seen the show. So.
Oh, I'm a medical TV show guru at this point. I just don't watch Grey's Anatomy.
I was going to say, I can honestly say without a fault, I have never watched a single episode of Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, I haven't either. Not even a second.
But so. I am a medical drama graduate. Thank you so much. I will be taking new patients tomorrow.
And I proudly graduated from Law and Order. And I
work for you. SVU. Southern Virginia University. I'm just kidding.
Oh, I love me some Law and Order. And that, what is the, new one? Is it Criminal Intent? I can't think of the name of it. I think that's what it is. No.
I was a Criminal Minds person.
Oh, yeah. Have you watched where they redone it?
No.
Here we go. Yep.
I stopped watching it when Derek Morgan left.
Wow.
Which was like 7 or 8 years ago now.
Nope. The I'll just say this, like, and then we'll get back to the missing person. Paramount Plus has the new season, and I'm telling you, it's great.
Okay, I'll take your
word. Highly recommend it.
I'll watch it soon. I love Criminal Minds.
Anyways, back to Megan
the Stallion. Genvix.
Her date of birth is January 12th, 1978. So she's currently 46, but at the time that she disappeared, she was 2.
Oh, baby.
Yeah, and so she was 2'1", weighing roughly 25 pounds at that time. Her distinguishing characteristics was she was a Caucasian female, brown hair, blue eyes. So, Megan was last seen in the early afternoon hours on April 30th, 1980. She was playing with her brother in the unfenced yard of her home, which was located in a remote wooded area of the region. She disappeared from the yard while her mother was inside doing chores and has never been seen again. Investigators do not believe Megan was abducted. There was only one road leading up to her house in 1980, and neighbors did not see any strangers or suspicious vehicles in the area. The police believe she probably wandered off or drowned in a nearby stream or was attacked by a wild animal. And it rained or snowed for 10 days after Megan's disappearance, and she was potentially exposed to the elements, and she couldn't have survived for very long after that, if that was the case.
Especially at 2, my goodness.
Yeah. An extensive search of the St. Ignatius, or how did you say it?
Ignatius.
Area turned up no signs of her, though, however. So, they never find her. Megan's parents had divorced earlier in 1980, and she came to Montana with her mother and brother. Her mother worked as a nanny for a family in exchange for a room and board for herself. Megan's father lived in Colorado, and he came to Montana to assist in the search for her. Authorities do not believe that Megan was harmed by either of her parents, but her father does believe that she was kidnapped by a family who wanted to raise a child. In that she may not know that she's a missing person, but due to the lack of evidence in Megan's case, they do have it classified as a non-family abduction, but there's no concrete evidence that, like, they could never find anything that she was actually injured, but they couldn't verify whether she was taken based off of what the neighbors saw either.
Right.
So.
If this sounds like you.
Yeah. Reach out. Center for Missing and Exploited Children or the Charlie Project. Right.
Or take a 23andMe.
23. I don't know. They said 23andMe got hacked a while back.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
Ancestry.com?
Maybe Ancestry.
Ancestry DNA.
Dun, dun, dun. So, we're going to get into my serial killer now here, okay?
I'm not ready, but I'm ready.
You're probably not going to be ready for this one.
Listen, nothing beats my free-for-all serial killer from Montana. So
yours, yeah.
Was wild.
This guy's name is David Meyerhoffer.
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 That's how I think it's pronounced.
No, that's probably how it's said. But
M-E-I-R.
Oh, yeah.
M-E-I-R-H-O-F-E-R. Meyerhoffer.
Yeah. Meyerhoffer.
So, on the face...
Meyerhoffer.
Meyerhoffer.
Just kidding.
I hope he's having a fabulous day wherever he is. I'm just kidding. I know where he is. So, on a fateful Sunday, June 24th, 1973, the Yeager family embarked on their long-awaited dream vacation, immersing themselves in the breathtaking beauty of the Missouri River State Monument Campground near Three Forks, Montana. Why it's called? I guess the Missouri River runs through it? I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fine.
I don't know.
I mean, there's rivers named...
Missouri's like way over here though. I don't know, but that's the name of the campground that I come up with.
I mean, that's fine. The Erie Canal runs through the entire state of New York, or it did.
So Marietta and Bill, accompanied by their 5 children, ranging in, from the ages of 7 to 16.
Okay, so no baby babies.
Right. So they reveled in the joyous moments that unfolded before them. Amongst the children, Susie was the youngest, so she was 7. And she possessed a radiant charm with her light brown hair, captivating hazel eyes, and a heart overflowing with kindness.
Aw, baby.
And as nightfall descended upon the campsite, the 3 youngest siblings sought solace in the comforting embrace of their shared tent. They all shared a tent together, unaware of the sinister events that would soon transpire.
That is so crazy to think about life. Like, one minute you're just having a normal evening, and then the next minute your whole world is upside down.
The tranquility of the night was shattered when an unknown intruder stealthily infiltrated the campsite, slicing through the tent's fabric and snatching away young Susie Yeager.
Oh my gosh.
The discovery of her teddy bear and beloved stuffed reindeer, which she usually clung to every night, only made matters worse for her family because they knew she would not willingly leave her lovies behind.
Mm-hmm.
Despite the tireless efforts of local law enforcement and the unwavering support of the townspeople, the subsequent search yielded no trace of the missing girl. So, however, this unsettling incident was not an isolated occurrence in the vicinity of Three Forks, a quaint city nestled in the rural expanse of southwest Montana. The haunting memories of 2 child murders that had plagued the area in the late 1960s raise the disquieting question as to whether a serial killer lurked in the shadows, preying upon the young, innocent souls. In their quest for answers, the FBI turned to an innovative and untested technique that would revolutionize their approach to apprehending serial killers and other nefarious criminals. So this case here is a big change. And you're going to see why it's monumental once we get into it.
Okay. What year was this again?
73. So the area was still reeling from a chilling crime that had occurred 4 years prior to Susie's disappearance. It was a hauntingly similar incident to the current kidnapping of young Susie Yeager, which had left the community on edge. Back in May of 1968, at the very same campsite, a 12-year-old Boy Scout named Michael Rainey had narrowly escaped an abduction. The perpetrator had cut through his tent and forcefully pulled him out, leaving him with a head wound and a stab on his side.
Oh, gosh.
Tragically, young Michael did succumb to his injuries 2 days later. So he initially lived, but then he passed away from the wounds.
Mm-hmm.
So this shocking incident had remained unsolved, too, which led to growing fear and more unease in the area, especially since little Susie disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
So the local authorities knew that they needed additional expertise to crack this case. So they called the FBI. And Special Agent Byron, he's known as Pete Dunbar, who was a native of Three Forks, was assigned to lead the investigation. Dunbar's extensive experience and familiarity with the area made him the perfect candidate for the job. Despite the FBI's jurisdiction being limited to federal crimes, they could intervene in cases at that time involving child abductions. So Dunbar meticulously combed through the evidence and pursued various leads, including a potential suspect named David Meyerhoff, who was a Marine veteran. However, despite initial suspicions, Meyerhoff's background and character didn't quite align with that of the kidnapper. So the search for the truth continued, leaving the community anxiously waiting for answers. So, who was David Meyerhoff? We're going to go into that first.
An asshole, I'm guessing.
Yeah, for sure. He was born June 8th, 1949 in Bozeman, Montana. Huh?
That's my sister's birthday.
Really?
Not 1945, but yeah, she was born 49. She was born on June 8th, though.
So, he had a humble upbringing in the small town of Manhattan. Growing up as one of Clifford and Eleanor Meyerhoffer's 5 children, he spent his childhood and adolescent in the close-knit community. However, life was not always easy for David. Attending high school, he faced challenges due to his introverted nature, which made him an outcast. Pretty much, he was, like, an outcast. Mm-hmm. And suffered from periodic bullying from other students. And so after graduating in 1967, he embarked on a journey of self-discovery through various odd jobs. However, his path took a turn when he was drafted into the Army in the fall of 1968. Choosing to enlist in the Marine Corps on October 1st, he found himself stationed at a military base in San Diego, California, as part of the Signal Corps. Following his basic training, he was deployed to Cherry Point before being sent to serve in the Vietnam War in 1969. Assigned to the 5th Communications Battalion, Meyerhofer played a crucial role in deploying communication systems and controlling military formations during armed assaults. His exceptional service earned him prestigious accolades such as the National Defense Service Medal, the Vietnam Service Medal, the Vietnam Campaign Medal, and after his return to the United States in August of 1971, he continued his military service at Marine Corps Base Camp Pendleton.
I've heard of Camp Pendleton before.
So, in 1973, his time in the Marine Corps came to an honorable end, and he returned to his hometown of Manhattan. Determined to make a living, he utilized his skills as a self-employed handyman and carpenter running his own shop in the city. So now we're going to go back to the cases. So I just wanted to fill you in on who he was and kind of his background. So you can see why they initially didn't see anything out of the ordinary in his background, in my opinion. That's why I wanted to go into that, because
he was just an average Joe. Yeah. Military guy.
Right. So the Susie Yeager case hit a roadblock, which caused a lot of frustration and concern among the investigators. But it was on a chilly, chilly winter evening of February 9th, 1974, when the community was struck with another blow. A 19-year-old local woman named Sandra Smalligan vanished without a trace. And as the story unfolded, it was revealing that Smalligan had attended a basketball game in Manhattan, Montana, before making a stop at the American Legion Bar. Little did anyone know that this would be the last time she would be seen alive. The following morning, panic set in as it became apparent that Smalligan had mysteriously disappeared, and of course her family reported her missing. So the search for Sandra intensified, with law enforcement leaving no stone unturned. After days of relentless efforts, a breakthrough came when Smalligan's car was discovered concealed in an abandoned homestead just outside of town. The discovery sent shockwaves through the community as it became evident that something sinister had taken place. To their horror, investigators stumbled upon human bones at the site, which were later confirmed to be the remains of both Susie Yeager and Sandra Smalligan.
Oh my gosh.
The chilling connection between the two cases left the community in a state of disbelief and heightened the urgency to bring the perpetrator to justice. So Special Agent Byron Dunbar's relentless pursuit of justice led him to revisit potential suspects, including David Meyerhoff, during his ongoing investigation. As we discussed, Meyerhoff was a former Marine who displayed unwavering composure and willingly agreed to undergo a polygraph test, which he effortlessly passed. Remember, we were talking about polygraph tests. With his work in Montana temporarily put on hold, Agent Dunbar embarked on a journey to Quantico, Virginia, where he was required to attend a crucial training course at the FBI Academy. But little did Dunbar know that during his time at the Academy would prove to be a turning point in his pursuit for the truth. During a workshop conducted by Patrick Mullany and Howard Teton, two renowned experts in the field, Dunbar's path intersected with a groundbreaking method of identifying serial killers and other criminals. Collaborating with Robert Ressler, another esteemed member of the behavioral science unit, Mullany and Teton meticulously examined the evidence Dunbar had sent them. Their efforts culminated in the creation of a psychological profile.
Wow.
He was the first profiled serial killer.
Okay, Criminal Minds.
That shed light on the potential suspect. When you said Criminal Minds, I was like, she's going to love this.
I love Criminal Minds.
So, according to reputable sources such as Psychology Today and the New York Daily News, the profile suggested that the killer was most likely a white male, familiar with the local area, operated alone, and had seized an opportunity to abduct Susie Yeager. Furthermore, the profile indicated that the suspect possessed exceptional deceitful skills and would likely maintain contact with the victim's families. To counter this, the BSU advised that the family to record any communications from the suspect. Additionally, the profile hinted at the suspect's possible military background. 1 year to the anniversary of Susie Yeager's disappearance, Marietta received a phone call from the killer himself. The voice on the other end of the line was cold and calculated as he taunted her, revealing that he had Susie in his possession. Despite the fear and panic that gripped Marietta, she managed to record the entire hour-long conversation. However, when the FBI attempted to trace the call, their efforts proved futile. It seemed as though the killer had covered his tracks well, but fate had a different plan in store. A few days later, a man named Ralph Green reached out to authorities, claiming that he had received an invoice for a phone call that he never made. This unsuspecting turn of events led the police to Green's residence in Three Forks. As they investigated the telephone cables, they stumbled upon a shocking discovery. Hidden within a line break, they found a voice gateway and other devices that they believed the kidnapper had used to make the call. So he had cut into somebody's phone line to make that call.
That's insane.
The pieces of the puzzle was slowly falling into place. Police played the audio recordings from the interrogation for Susan's devastated parents, who immediately recognized the voice of David Meyerhofer. The grieving mother, Marietta, confronted Meyerhofer multiple times, accusing him by name of her daughter's murder and urging him to confess. Little did they know that their confrontations would only further enrage the kidnapper, and on September 24th, he called the Yeager family once again, this time using the alias Travis. His voice dripped with anger as he declared that they would never see Susie alive again, blaming their cooperation with the police for this vengeful act. Unbeknownst to Meyerhofer, the FBI had been monitoring the call, and with the help of, like, audio examination, they were able to conclusively prove that he was indeed the caller. The very next day, they swiftly arrested him, bringing an end to the nightmare that haunted the Yeager family for far too long. As Meyerhofer sat at the Galation County Jail in Bozeman, authorities wasted no time in searching his house and car. What they discovered was beyond horrifying. Bloodied women's clothes, washed out blood stains, and even a human hand.
Ew.
And several fingers, so severed fingers, were found. Chilling evidence of the heinous crimes committed by this disturbed individual. Upon discovering these revelations on September 29th, Meyerhofer made a shocking admission, confessing not only to one, but two heinous crimes. The first was the abduction and murder of Susie Yeager, the young girl who disappeared on February 10th. Or, I'm sorry, Susie Yeager. But then he also admitted to the murder of Smalligan. So, the reason that he come out with... So, Meyerhofer revealed during his interrogation that he initially tried to establish a romantic relationship with Smalligan. But
she didn't like him.
She rejected him, and he resorted to kidnapping her. He bound and gagged her, and ultimately leading to her being suffocated and murdered.
That's awful.
He disclosed that he stabbed her to death shortly after. Hold on. Sorry.
You're fine.
But basically, like, he just was like, he killed her because she turned him down.
Don't you hate that?
He suffocated her and killed her.
I feel like that's even a step further in the worst realm, because it's the epitome of, I can take whatever I want.
Right. But he did admit to disposing of the evidence as well. He gruesomely dismembered the bodies of both of these ladies.
Dude, wasn't the one a 7-year-old girl?
Mm-hmm. Using a, the little girl and the lady, he dismembered the bodies using a hunting knife and a wood saw before burning their bodies in a fire pit and then scattering their ashes and the remains of their bones at the Lockhart place where they located all the remains. And then In a desperate bid to avoid the death penalty, Meyerhofer's defense attorney negotiated a plea deal that involved the confession of two additional murders that he had not yet been linked to. The first of these murders was that of the 13-year-old Bernard L. Pullman, who had been fatally shot on a bridge in Three Forks on March 19, 1967, while swimming with a friend. Initially, the police had attributed the incident as an accidental shooting or a stray bullet from hunters or target shooters. However, Meyerhofer's confession shed light on the true nature of the crime. So he shot the little boy on the bridge.
Insanity.
The second additional murder was that of the 12-year-old Boy Scout, Michael Rainey, who had been brutally beaten and stabbed, you know, because he beat him when he was trying to get him out of the tent on May 7th, 1968. While the motive behind these murders still remain unclear, Meyerhofer admitted that he targeted Michael simply because he wanted to harm a young child. Interrogators suspected that Meyerhofer may have been responsible for more than just these four murders, but he only confessed to those committed in the county which they were in. Just 4 hours after Meyerhofer had confessed to his crimes, he was discovered lifeless in his jail cell. It was a shocking sight to behold. He had taken his own life by hanging himself with a towel. The jailers were completely unaware that Meyerhofer was a murder suspect, and thus he had not been placed under suicide watch. His lack of knowledge and precaution led to this unfortunate outcome, and the families didn't actually get the full justice that they deserved. Despite the closure of the cases linked to Meyerhofer, the true reason behind his heinous acts and the motivations that drove him to commit these atrocities still remain a mystery.
He was crazy!
Here's the kicker, though. Wait for it. Wait. I'm not quite done. In 1986, Alan Meyerhofer, the younger brother, was arrested for a series of child rapes that occurred near Seattle, Washington. The shocking crimes sent shockwaves through all the communities, and in 1988, Alan was convicted for all of his heinous actions.
I bet he should have been.
However, after serving a lengthy sentence, he was released in 2017, leaving many to wonder about the possible connections between his crimes and those committed by his brother David. Despite the curiosity surrounding the matter, Alan has refused to speak to any journalist or police about any potential links between their criminal activity.
Well, they probably work together.
That's what I figured, too. When I read that, I was like, oh, that's why there was a 7-year-old girl that was kidnapped. His brother was a pervert.
Ew.
I'm just saying, like, it sounds to me like they were taking girls, you know.
And boys.
Yeah.
Ew.
So, yeah, because he had made the statement that he wanted to harm a child, remember?
Yeah.
So, that is the...
I don't like them. I don't like either of them. I know it was just mainly about the one brother, but David, I don't like either of them because it's really gross.
It is gross, but it makes me wonder if they weren't in on it together.
No, they must have
been. One brother took the fall for them both and then killed his dog.
Mm-mm.
But what if the one brother actually was the one doing it all?
And he's still out there? Because he got out in 2017.
Right. What if he was the one doing it all and David took the fall for him?
I still don't like that. That poor little girl.
Either way.
Poor kid. I mean, all the poor victims, but that poor little girl.
Right. The poor little girl, the little boy. I mean, imagine being a Boy Scout sleeping in your tent. Your tent gets cut open and you get kidnapped.
Imagine going on a family camping trip with your four siblings and you get cut out of your tent.
And then God only knows what actually happened to her because he never really said what happened to her.
Mm-mm.
He just said that he hacked them up. And burned their bodies.
Yeah, that was the end game. Like, that was the end. Like, who knows what happened from the time she was taken till that happened.
Right.
That's disgusting.
So, that is, that's Montana, folks. Apparently, there's too much space and too much time out there. And people need to get it together.
I know, that's insane.
I still want to visit, though.
No, I still want to go. One of my favorite video games, I just realized, is based in Montana.
Really?
Which, if you've never played Far Cry 5.
No.
It's amazing. It was like, I don't consider myself a gamer, but I have played a few games. Like, the
Uncharted series. They made the Uncharted into a movie, but it's based on Nathan Drake, who is a treasure hunter. But the Far Cry series is about different areas throughout the world and different dictators, and you have to kind of like take them down. Well, Far Cry 5 is a family, and you have three different people that you, no, four different people that you have to take down, but it's set in Missoula, Montana.
There we go.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a video game person, guys. I try. Luigi's Mansion is like as good as I get.
Oh yeah, I don't play that many games by far. Lewis is very clearly the gamer. When a game catches my attention, like I binge played the Far Cry 5 game in probably 2 weeks.
Yeah, no. The only game I've ever played all the way through and beat it was Spyro the Dragon.
I did the entire Uncharted series. I did 2, 3, 4, and then I didn't finish the, it's not a remake, but it's a continuation with two female explorers, but I played 2, 3, and 4 all the way through. I called out of work one day to play the Uncharted 4 game. That's how addicted I was to that game back in
That's
like
funny.
2017. But yeah, I just realized, because I was like, I feel like I've seen the mountains of Montana. It's obviously a
Yeah.
general like play on the depiction of Montana, because I mean it does say that the game takes place in Missoula, Montana, but I still want to go there.
Yeah.
I just won't go alone.
Well, the good news is both of our dudes are dead, so.
Well, that's just two of the dudes.
Yeah. Just carry a gun.
The other guy's still chilling.
But he
His
was
brother?
in Washington though. He'd went to Washington.
Oh, he didn't go back to Montana?
Well, his crimes happened in Washington, Seattle,
The crimes
Washington.
that we know about.
Yeah, true.
I'm
Bunch of perverts.
just gonna assume that he was working with his brother, because
I
what the
think so
hell?
too. I think they
But
were a tag team duo.
that's kind of gross, though. Two people in the same family?
Well, no, I'm just saying in general, I think they committed their crimes together. That's what I mean by saying like a tag team duo.
Oh
Like,
no,
I
but that's
think,
what I mean. Like,
yeah.
two people in the same family, both being criminals of that regard. Like, petty theft and, like, things like that. Like, like street crimes or whatever. That's more likely to be, like, a family thing. Like,
Yeah.
my older brother does it, so I do it. Or my
I would say
sister
there's a
does it,
lot
so I
of
do it.
trauma. I mean, and I'm not making excuses, but I would say there's some kind of very, very traumatic experience in their past that led them both to where they are. If they're both doing it.
And their weird obsession with children.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Something probably happened to them when they were kids.
Probably. But still, I just think
Doesn't
they're
give an
two different.
excuse. I'm just
No.
saying, like, I think.
I don't think any sane person would excuse that.
I'm just saying, psychologically, hurt people hurt people. And most of the time, people that are hurt hurt people in the same way they were hurt.
Well, thank you for bringing him to us. I'm happy that he's deceased, though. I'm not
Yeah.
gonna lie. I typically don't like when people are dead, but the bad ones return.
To hell where they came from.
I honestly believe that, like, you can be reincarnated from hell. Like, does that make sense? Like, you could be born.
I feel like
Like,
there
your
is.
soul. Like, not you as a person, but you know how, like, they say, like, oh, they're an old soul or they're this. Like, why can't you have an evil soul?
You
Like,
can.
why
I feel
can't
like
you
you
be
can.
born in a negative manner? Like,
We don't know how it all works.
I always
Because some
wondered
people
that.
believe in reincarnation and stuff.
My dad always said that he wanted to be reincarnated. Don't know if he ever came back, though. It's been 3 years.
Maybe he's Zorro.
No, that's Ozzy.
You think so?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I
So
think
I'm
our
just
dog
gonna.
Ozzy comes to Zorro in his dreams.
Yeah.
I hope so, because Ozzy was the best dog ever. His 3-year death anniversary is coming up.
Yeah.
But no, my dad always said that he wanted to come back as something. He wanted to be reincarnated, so I wonder if that happened. We won't know till it's our time.
Right. We don't know what happens. I mean, we just gotta assume. And hope and pray you're doing the right thing.
But at the same time, if I assume too long or if I dwell on it too long, I scare myself. I try not to think about it either.
Oh my.
It's more the ominous thought that once you're gone, there's nothing.
I don't believe that.
Well, you know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
you know how we get up every day and we live our lives, and then like people pass away and then they're just gone. Like, you can, they you remember them and stuff, but it's like you go through your entire life and you're busy and you're doing this and you're spending money and you're spending time with people and you're getting hurt and you're getting sick and you're getting better and having great, you know, moments and memories and stuff. And then all of a sudden you like just cease
to be
in this particular realm? Space.
Yeah.
Like as this body, as this, you know, being, it's just done. Like there's a beginning and then there's an end and then we get to experience everything in between. That's the part that scares me, is just the end. It's like as soon as Sarah Cerise dies, like that is the end of this particular individual, whether you come back, whether you exist in a different realm, whatever the case may be, your time is over. That's it. Like there is no more this life. And I think that's the part that freaks me out, because it's like we live our whole lives for the future. Like, what are we going to do next? Who are we going to see? Who are we going to be? What are we going to do? Who are we going to meet? Where are we going to go? And then all of a sudden, you just, it's no more. Like, there's nothing. And I think that's the part that's, like, really scary to think about
for me. It doesn't matter how old you are.
It doesn't.
Because I'm going to just go and toss this out there. Where I'm from, in Madison County, just this week, what is it? It was Tuesday, Wednesday. 17-year-old girl was on her way to school. She pulled out in front of one of the local electric trucks. She was trying to make a left turn.
Mm-hmm.
He was coming straight. He had the right of way. She pulled out in front of him, and he struck her car. She died. And the girl that was with her, who was her best friend, is in critical condition. But I mean, 17.
That poor driver. That
no, poor driver.
Hit them. Wasn't his intention. He woke up that day just going to work like everybody else.
But luckily, I mean, in my opinion, luckily, the little girl had been saved. They said she was a great example of a follower of Jesus. Mm-hmm. And so her family is resting in knowing that,
you know. She's with our Lord.
Right.
Whatever that might look like or be.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the show Miracle Workers?
Mm-mm.
With Daniel Radcliffe, you should watch it. At least season one, because it takes place with Steve Buscemi as God, and Daniel Radcliffe plays an angel, and he works in the prayer department. Yeah. Listen, if I get to heaven, like, God forbid, fingers crossed, I make it to heaven. If I go to heaven and I have to have a desk job, yeah. I'm going to be so mad. Because why did I have to work in my current life, and now I gotta go to work in the afterlife too? What kind of paycheck do I get?
I don't think it's gonna be like that.
You don't think I gotta go to work?
I mean,
you don't think, like,
I mean, I think we might have to lead some people and guide some people,
but you don't think I have to be a paper pusher?
I don't think you're gonna have to push papers.
Okay, cool, because I don't want to do that. Like, I'll do work, because what the heck else am I supposed to do,
Sarah, for eternity? Whenever you get there, tell them at the door, at the gates, okay?
I don't want to be a paper pusher.
Say, I want a in the field job, sir.
Yes.
Can I work in the field?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Listen, I've seen the memes and the little short videos that people make about becoming ghosts instead of, like, just living up in heaven. Like, you become a ghost and you have to go haunt people. And, like, how they go and haunt. And they're like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to be a haunter. A haunter or whatever. And they're like, but I suck at this job. Nobody's scared of me.
But who's to say our spirits aren't hanging out until the very end? We don't know.
No, I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. Like, who say ghosts aren't real. But how do we know that, like,
spirits... Oh, I believe ghosts are real. My dad in his life claimed that he used to see them. My friend Laura claims, I'm not saying claims as in, like, I don't believe them, just these are claims that they have made that they can see and talk to them. I have no personal firsthand proof of either or, so I'm just going to be like, yeah, absolutely, they 100% exist.
Yeah, but my thoughts are, is who's to say that the pearly gates are open right now? We don't know. We could be hanging out until the very end, until the rapture happens. We might just be hanging out here.
On my Facebook of my brother, one of my older brothers, my twin, as I call him, because we are 10 years apart, but we are very, very eerily similar. And in 2009, 2010, when the rapture was supposed to happen, he he laid his clothes out flat on the floor with a hat at the top as if he had been like raptured out of his clothes. It was too funny. It's on my Facebook somewhere.
That's hilarious.
But yeah, like, I don't know. But this guy sucks, and I hope that he's having a hard time in hell.
Yeah, me too.
But I hope that all of his victims are having a great time in heaven. And that's it. Well, thank you guys for listening. Thank you, Alicia, for bringing that.
It's not my favorite one to bring, but you're welcome.
Listen, we got other doozies to come for other states, so.
All you I'm guys gonna preface... just wait till Texas.
Listen, my Texas is 17 pages long. So get ready to buckle up, y'all. I don't know if Texas is going to be the next week. The next week's episodes or the week
next
after.
Week is a laugh.
Okay, then in 2 weeks. Stay tuned for our Texas, because I think they're both horrible doozies. And I switched mine like 3 times, and I told you, I was like, I'm changing mine again. And it ended up, I wrote it all out, it ended up being 17 pages of notes.
I summarized mine down to 6 pages.
Mine is a summary.
I'm just saying.
I'm just
mine
saying.
Was like 11 pages, and I managed to get it down to 6.
Yeah, mine is 17. Mine's and about the length of the one that I did for New York.
Mine's going to be a lot of factual, not a lot of storytelling. A lot of this is this, this is that.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's so much attached to my Texas.
Yeah. Well, be on the lookout for those. We hope that you enjoyed this one. Please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. Please consider joining our Patreon. Please tell your friends about us. As soon as we hit 150 followers and likes on our Facebook page, we'll be doing a giveaway.
Yep.
We're close. I think we're just shy of 140.
But we gotta get you to enter to win, okay?
I thought everybody was entered.
Oh, okay. We're doing it that way. Never
yeah,
mind.
We're just gonna do like a random, like...
I didn't know. I thought at one point we were doing like a...
Well, we can figure something out. I mean, we still have time. I mean, we've been promoting this for a little while now, but we are getting closer, so it is becoming more and more, you know, possible. Because... we are growing.
We are growing.
We've only been doing this for 4 months.
Yep.
5 months? October, November, December, January. We're starting month 5.
We're starting month 5 as of yesterday?
2 days ago. No.
Yesterday.
Yesterday.
The 2nd.
Yeah.
We aired October 2nd.
Yeah. So, no worries, guys. Just consider, you know, telling your friends about us. But yeah, that's it. We will see you next time for Alaska. You have any parting words for the fans?
Lock your doors. If anything, like, don't camp either.
Camping sucks. Go glamping, where you have a lock on a trailer or something.
I don't want to do that now.
I would rather glamp than camp, because at least I can flush a toilet.
Stay at your house.
With your doors locked.
Yeah, lock your doors and don't play with Ouija boards, because that way you're protected on all sides.
And if you do play with a Ouija board, make sure you say goodbye.
Don't do it.
Don't do it. But, as I say every episode, there's probably something sinister right in your own backyard.
Dun, dun, dun.